everyone, I'm Colin Ellis, best-selling author, award-winning public speaker, and facilitator of global workplace culture change. And in this, the Culture Makers podcast, I get people managers from around the world to share actionable things that you can do too to create a great place to work. I hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Culture Makers podcast with your host, Colin D. Ellis. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Bronwyn Clare. Bronwyn is currently the operations executive for Infraco, which is the asset-based business of Australian telecommunications company Telstra. Now, prior to joining Infraco, Bronwyn was head of growth platforms at Telstra Health, executive director, capital planning and delivery at Telstra, and a managing partner for a couple of years at JP Morgan. She has also worked for AIA in Hong Kong and AXA in Australia, New Zealand, and the United Kingdom. Wait, there's more. She's an employer director for Telstra Superannuation Scheme, the chair of Telstra's Super Audit Risk and Compliance Committee, and a graduate of Australian Graduate School of Management and Masters of Project Management from the University of New South Wales. Bronwyn, hello.
Hello, Colin. Lovely to be with you.
Thank you. That's quite the resume that you have there. Now, my immediate question is, I always, when I'm doing my little background checks, when I'm putting the shows together, is, was the goal to go into financial services kind of straight from university? I think you studied in New Zealand. I think that's right. And then it was straight into financial services. Was that the goal, Bron?
Oh, absolutely not. I'd love to say that I had a very, very clear career plan right from the beginning, and I didn't. I went to university in Wellington, New Zealand, because I'm a Kiwi, and studied music, actually, because that's what I had sort of grown up doing at school. And I soon found out that in moving to a larger centre, I was a big fish in a small pond where I grew up, and I was a very small fish in a very big pond when I went to university. So I studied music for 3 years, which was terrific, can I say? But my father, right the way through, it kept saying to me, "You're never going to get a good job doing that," and he was absolutely right. So I sort of when I left uni, moved into financial services. Was really lucky to get a job with an organisation at the time in Wellington called National Mutual, and I think I just found my home. So I was working with a small team. We were managing unit trust investments, and learned very, very quickly and very much on the job as I went. I loved the culture, loved the work that we did, and it just really clicked with me. It was very logical, structured, and it was very clear on what we had to deliver. And from there on, I just sort of gravitated to roles similar to that. But as I moved in my career, bigger and bigger challenges.
It's funny how our parents shape the kind of decisions that we make early on. And I know in the Culture Makers podcast in the past, you know, people have said, oh, well, you know, my dad said I would never make it here. You know, my dad was the same. My dad was like, if you don't get a job, I'll find you a job as a carpenter or an electrician. He said, you can't go wrong with a trade. You'll always have work. what musical instrument was it that you, was it a specific instrument, Bronwyn, or was it kind of musical?
My major was composition, but I grew up, I played the violin pretty badly, actually. played the oboe, which is probably what I learned sort of in my most formative years. The oboe is a really hard instrument to learn. You've got to have amazing breath control. My dad made me practice in the shed because in the early years I was absolutely dreadful at it. But also did voice as well, so sang. So it's something that I don't do today. The older you get, the less time you have for that. But it was really, really formative for me, actually, in terms of sort of having structure and making sure I practiced the performance side of it, which for an introvert like me was really important. It was a really great thing to do.
You know, here's a little bonus from this podcast, something that we have in common. So I played the oboe for 3 years at school as well.
So, who knew? You know exactly how hideous it is when you first start to learn.
I know exactly how it is. But the one thing I remember about the oboe, and I'm still not sure to this day how I came to play it in the school orchestra, but that was my instrument. I remember how expensive the reeds were, because I remember breaking two, and my dad then insisting that every subsequent read I had to pay for out of my paper round money. Ooh. And so I never broke another one. So you said something really interesting, you know, kind of when you went into financial services and that you really enjoyed the culture. And so what was it in those early days, Bronwyn, about, you know, kind of the dynamic of working together, you know, kind of what, when you look back, what really stood out for you from a culture perspective?
So, yeah, really good question. I was when I first started, I was part of a much smaller team within a big organisation. And it had a very, we call it a startup feel today. There was no such thing as startups back in the day. But it had a really, really strong startup feel in that it was a small team. There was lots of work to do. As a team, we kind of decided who was going to do what. We played to each other's strengths and experience. We had a leader who was pretty unrelenting in terms of what he expected and demanded for the team. You know, we were trying to grow that investment category for New Zealanders. And so, you know, the quality, the standard of delivery had to be really, really high. And so as a team, you sort of banded together to achieve what at sometimes were pretty outrageous requirements or deadlines. And so that ability to be fulfilled because you were achieving things. And I was in my early 20s at the time as well. So it was a very social time as a team. You know, we worked very, very hard, but we also, played very hard, you know, dinners and drinks and things like that. And to this day, I still have, and this was over 30 years ago, one of my best friends is somebody that I met and worked with during that time. So I think it was those things about having a very clear purpose, having an unrelenting and unforgiving goal, and a team that actually played to everybody's strengths. Those were the things that really made it fantastic for me.
When I think back myself to my own career and for me when culture really stood out, I think it was when we had those kind of targets. You know, my first management job was kind of leading year 2000 projects, which you'll remember really well, when year 2000 projects. And, you know, my goal was to build a team, and it was almost an impossible deadline. We had something like 8 centers that we had to do across the UK. I still to this day, people ask me, oh, well, if you've got really, you know, kind of stretched targets, do you have to abandon culture? And in my experience, and I'm interested in your view on this, for me, that's when you need to come together to talk about, well, what are we going to actually do to hit that goal? And because it is achievable, providing that you make the, I guess, a determination of the things you're going to work on together in order to get there. Is that fair?
I think that's eminently fair. I think any problem is solvable, can I say? And it's just the way you go about it. And one of my most recent sort of career highlights was working in Telstra Health. And Colin, you know a bit about that because you were part of building our culture. And we had immovable deadlines. So Telstra Health were very excited and very privileged to be able to run the technology and the services that support a number of national cancer screening programs for Australia. And those deadlines could not be moved. And so we had an absolute clarity and sense of purpose and a very strong mission because many of our team were super passionate about what we were building and why we were building it. And what it does do is it just forces, I think, team problem solving. It forces you to sometimes abandon things like, well, this is my job and that's your job and everybody should stick to their lane, because as a team you gravitate or pitch in to help on the things that absolutely make a difference and matter, and because that deadline is looming and it's so important to either the team or the customer or the country, you're able to achieve outstanding activities, and not at the cost of burning people out or not at the cost of dropping scope that's, you know, fundamental to meeting that. There are always ways to manage around some of those intractable problems.
I completely agree. Now, you mentioned the work, you know, I was very fortunate to work with you at Telstra Health. I'm someone who's followed you for a while. Our paths crossed very, very briefly when I worked at Telstra. And one of the things Yeah, one of the things that really struck me when we did the workshop to define the culture was the leadership that you brought, Bronwyn. And it was something that ran all the way through the workshop. People talked to me about it, about just how inspirational you were as a leader. And I, you know, one of the things I always say about culture is what you want is you want your leaders to be role models for what they expect of everyone else. And you're absolutely that role model. I'm just wondering, kind of in your career, particularly early on, were there people that you looked up to and said, you know what, that's the right way to do things? Because I often think, particularly in our early 20s, as we're kind of finding our feet, you know, maybe our first management roles, we're looking for people who are magnets where we can kind of go, right, I'm going to copy what they do because we've seen what they bring. Would you have some of those people in your life?
Oh, absolutely. Look, there's a couple that really stand out. And can I say, it's also the leaders that perhaps don't role model the right leadership that you learn from as well, because you go, gosh, right, I'm not going to be like that person. I'm never going to do that. And I think because you feel it doesn't feel great. And so for me, it was like I'm never going to ask my team to feel the way that I felt during that particular circumstance or issue. There are a couple of leaders who really, really stood out for me. One is a lady called Jane Perry. Many, many people will know her. And I worked for Jane for many years, actually, in AXA and JP Morgan. I actually moved organisations to work for her. And I think Jane is a very, very experienced executive. Was very, very clear on what had to be achieved. But what I learned from her was that you actually need to take the time out to build culture, to take the time to understand the team's strengths and weaknesses, to make the personal connections. And she did all of this in a very structured approach, almost a formulaic approach. And can I say that my learnings from Jane were that there is a bit of a formula that you can follow, but that you need to make it yours, and you need to make it genuine, and it needs to be delivered, and you need to take that personal leadership, as you talk about, you know, you have to role model what it was, and Jane did that every day. I had another mentor slightly later in my career, a gentleman called John Bassett, who was a very well-known delivery leader globally. He's actually UK-based and spent some time in Australia with us. John taught me all about project management, but taught me all about the behaviours of project management, less so the technical component, which you can learn anywhere, really. And again, John taught me to stop whinging, so that it would be, you know, he taught me that when I got stuck in a problem and I was whinging about why everybody else, you know, wasn't doing the right thing, he was pretty good about lifting me out from that and saying, well, what are you going to do? What's your going to be your response? How are you going to lead through this? And I learned a lot from John in terms of, he was probably the best analyst I've ever worked with, had an amazing mind and was able to sort of structure our way out of problems. And I learned a lot from John about his thinking, the ability to sort of lift your eyes away from the immediate problem and to understand a path forward, but a path forward that was productive and it wouldn't damage team or people behind you.
Yeah, they're really good insights. I used to have a saying, save the moans for home. Whenever any of my team, I remember one time actually, I built a team and I was in federal government in New Zealand, and the team were just moaning, and I stopped the meeting. I said, okay, I'm just going to let you moan for half an hour, and then we're done for the rest of the year. it just gets in the way of actually productive work. Anyway, that's really good. I'm glad you mentioned the project management side of things, because that's something else that we have in common, other than the oboe, which I've now discovered. I think we share it's somewhat unique view of project management, that it's really all about kind of building the behaviors, building the team, and the methods almost play second fiddle to that. Mm. I think what we saw, particularly in the early 2000s, and it was this real proliferation of methods, you know, and Prince 2 and Pimbok and latterly Scrum. And it's not that these things are wrong, it's just that we forget sometimes that projects are a people business. Is that something you'd agree with?
Well, absolutely. And actually, you know, John taught me this right from the beginning. So when I started to work with him, I really hadn't had any extensive project expertise. I wouldn't know what a PMBOK was, you know, me in the face at that point in time. And he said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to train you all, and there's about eight of us, and I'm going to train you all in the fundamentals of project management. But that's not the important thing. It's so that you've got a common language. It's so that when somebody's talking about critical path or talking about stakeholder management plans, you understand a little bit about what they're saying. But what is important is the way in which you lead, that you take accountability for the outcomes, that you problem solve with your team. So I absolutely, that's always been my benchmark. I can lead projects. I sort of, in my career, I've moved into sort of sponsor roles, or I've moved back into project delivery roles, or into sort of almost a pseudo-sponsor delivery role. But I went back to university 10 years ago to do my master's in project management, because I wanted to keep my technical expertise current. I want to be able to hold my own in a conversation with my project team, but that's not where I spend all my time. And I think the methodology needs to be adapted to the type of work that you're doing. Never let it go, but it's about the people you recruit and you bring around you to deliver the project. And then it's the way that that project team leads through with customers or with clients or receivers of the project. You know, that's what's important, and that's what I think sets a great project apart from a good project.
I completely agree. I also think as well that projects and programs of work offer organisations an opportunity to almost test a culture building process. You know, I was speaking to a potential client recently, and they're about to stand up a big program of work, and they were saying, oh, we're not sure whether we should bring you in to define the culture. I was like, yeah, it's a real opportunity for you to develop a really strong subculture around a set of outcomes. You know, it's almost a way of looking at what the organization does and saying, oh, how can we kind of improve and tweak those things? And you know, that's something that you've done. You know, you really understand the power of subcultures, Bronwyn. So, you know, when we were at Telstra Health on the program, it was like, it's really important for this piece of work to have this kind of culture in order to deliver, right?
That's correct. I think subcultures can be a little bit dangerous if they become tribal, or that they don't, you know, that it's so intense and so insular, that it doesn't work well with the rest of an organisation or a client group. So you've always got to think about developing a subculture with that in mind. That's the part of the subculture tendency needs to be that, you know, we work with everybody, and we, you know, we're proud of what we do, and we show up as a team that wants to help the organisation. Mm. Yes, I mean, I think I'm a super competitive person, if you don't already know that about me. I love my team to be the best team, whatever we're assessing ourselves at, we like to be the best. And I think that rubs off on people in a healthy way, but I'm always very conscious. I want people to have pride in the work that they do and feel that they have line of sight to an organisation's goals, and that they're amazing. Major contributor to a significant goal, because that just improves the whole purpose and meaning. People talk a lot about purpose and projects, and I absolutely, that is the number one thing that we need to develop further in project management body of work. But a subculture, I think, is super important to achieving those ends, but not at the expense of making that subculture an island. Hopefully I've said that well enough.
Yeah, no, I always say there's a fine line between cult and culture, and your goal is to create a culture that's connected to the organisation, not a cult that just does its own thing off to the side. Yes. It's so true. Now, you mentioned the fact that you went back to university to do your Masters of Project Management, and I'm always interested in how kind of leaders and culture makers, I like to call them, how you keep yourself relevant. You know, kind of what are the things that you do? Because world of workplace culture has changed significantly over the last 10, 15 years, even in the last 3 years since the pandemic. So what are the things that you do, Bronwyn, to kind of keep yourself relevant in the world of work today?
Yeah, it's a great question, actually. So you mentioned the fact that the world has changed so significantly. When I first started working, so we shared one PC amongst five people, and we're sort of now in this world where we're able to work anywhere at any time, and we're always on, say. And I love learning, so I'm a very experiential learner. So I need to see and feel, make the mistakes, and work through an issue, and then reflect back on that. So I do take a lot of time to look back on a particular meeting or a particular problem or a cycle in a project to go, how did I show up? What would I do differently now I've learned that? And I really do take those lessons to heart and apply those moving forward. I did. And reference the fact that I went back to uni and did my master's once my children had sort of grown up a little bit, which was great. I loved that because I went through the coursework, everything I read and studied and listened to, I went, oh yeah, I've seen that happen. To be able to apply that learning in the real world, I think is super important. I would encourage anybody doing postgraduate study to work for a while or experience that environment before you actually jump into that. But Telstra is terrific in terms of their thinking and their lead on future ways of working, we call it. So, how the workforce is evolving, how the nature of work is evolving. They invest a lot of time in their leadership teams to make sure that we understand the latest thinking, to understand as leaders how we respond and lead within that thinking. So I've learned a lot from my organisation. And then the final thing, and this one probably a little bit sheepishly, I would say, but it is make time for your network. And so networks are not just about meeting lots of great people and one day maybe they'll find you a job. I think that networks are around connecting people that do similar pieces of work, that have had similar challenges, that are people that you've worked with or you want to work with and you want to have their point of view on things. And so for me personally, that's dropped off a little bit since the pandemic. I think people I've got very used to sort of working in my own bubble at home, or if I'm in the office, I'm sort of doing other things. So it's, to me, something in 2023 that I really wanted to focus on. But making sure that you take that time out to have a coffee or to go and meet with somebody, or even as some of my network do, pick up the phone and say, I've got a bit of an issue. How would you think about this? So using that network to really learn what others are doing, I think is so powerful.
Fantastic tips, Bronwyn. I always say that you're as good as the people that you surround yourself with, and I completely agree with the networking piece. I'll often meet people in the city just to talk about what their viewpoint is, what they've seen, what they've read, what they've listened to that I could do. I think there's so much we can learn from other people. Bronwyn, it's been great to have you on the show. I've got one last question before we finish. So what do you do to relax? Now, you're a person that likes to travel. So is traveling your opportunity just to kind of breathe and experience other cultures? How do you take a break from this thing we call work?
Work. It's a great question. So firstly, I have three grown-up daughters now who are the lights of my life. So my decompressing time is spending time with them and doing things with them, whether that be sort of helping them with things around their house or, having a meal out or something like that. They just add so much balance into my life. Like you, I love to travel. I'm very excited. My husband and I have got a month off in August and we're doing sort of a bit of a US-UK tour. So, and the reason why I love that is, partly to experience a different life. But it also acts as a bit of a circuit breaker from just your life at home and all of the jobs that we have to manage as human beings that have houses and jobs and children. And it just is a real sort of rest from that as well. Those are probably my two loves, spending time with my family. Recently, we've been renovating, so I've been having, I got a bit bored during the pandemic, and so fixer up a house, and we've spent the last 3 years renovating, and I've always got a bit of a project, and I love that. I love the real tangible outcome that you can get from a renovation as well.
Once a project manager, always a project manager.
Totally.
We can't help ourselves.
My trainees hate me.
Well, Bronwyn, it has been fantastic. You're someone who I've admired for a long time. It's been fantastic to have you on the show and to share your thoughts with everyone. Thank you so much for being a guest on the Culture Makers podcast.
Thank you, Colin. It was great to be here.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you've enjoyed the show, please share the link with your colleagues and friends or with your connections on social media. If you'd like to find out more about the work that I do, head to www.colindellis.com or find me on LinkedIn.